Season 3, Episode 19, Anti-Maimed.
Get it?
This episode opens with Andy cooing at some pigeons. It's kind of strange. And then he's freaking out because Sylvia is getting ready to pop. She is well pregnant. It's one of those classic Sipowicz situations where because he's stressed, he's going to make it miserable for everybody.
Yeah.
He goes over the 911 beeper procedure with Sylvia, and then he has to get called out to this homicide where a woman had her face bashed in with a hammer.
I mean, it's cool. Normal day.
You know.
Normal day in the NYC.
And the important things they discover is some checks were ripped off, and there was a bag placed over her head, but it wasn't before the hammer. It was afterwards.
Yeah.
Everybody in the building, including the neighbor that found her, is pinning it on her nephew named Billy, and they're saying...
Yeah, they constantly bring him up as, like, being a deadbeat.
Junkie and a liar and a thief, and the neighbor says that she was using Billy for some work around the apartment, and when he used Billy for it, Billy stole his radio.
Yeah.
This entire opening scene ends with Metavoy getting a beep from his wife that says 911, and he says,
oh my gosh.
He says out loud, "Oh, Marie can't pick up the kids from dance recital," or dance practice, and Sipowicz goes, "That is an improper use of the 911 code."
Yeah, he has like a fucking mental breakdown. And about it.
And Metavoy, one of the few times that like he stands up for himself with like a legitimate argument, he goes, "It was a private correspondence between me and my wife."
Yeah.
Like it was, he's like, it's not a statement about the use of 911. It's just what me and my wife use. And Simone kind of walks up to Metavoy and goes, "Sylvia is about to give birth, and that's the code." And Metavoy just goes, oh boy. Like, he just kind of... Because he knows in his head, this means the entire precinct is
gonna... Yeah, but the thing that bugged me is Simone shouldn't encourage Andy's, like, ridiculousness. Simone should tell Andy, like, "Hey, chill out, man. Greg's using it the way he wants to use it." Simone should have never said anything to Greg. Greg did nothing wrong. Andy was the one being childish and immature. He should have said, "Hey, Andy, chill. He's just talking to his wife or his ex-wife. Like, calm the fuck down." I don't know.
It seems like after years and years of dealing with Andy, everybody kind of just treats him as the runaway train, and then they just kind of fix the things that he breaks and then leaves in his path. So I think Simone was kind of just going, "Hey, Metavoy, like, it's not you, it's this stupid situation." Anyway, that was the end of the opening. This is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, talk about every single episode of the best show ever, NYPD Blue. And this is the theme song to NYPD Blue.
Boom.
Just to get the side stories out of the way so we can get to the main one. Donna, in this episode, was offered a job to go to Silicon Valley and work for Apple.
Yeah, I have a few issues with this storyline.
It has what I would call the proper episode title of this, which would be a lark. Because she keeps calling it a lark. I did it more or less on a lark. She took a computer class earlier in the show, and she's like, "Oh, and I just applied to Apple, and they called me back, and they want me to be a receptionist out there."
Right, isn't that, like, that's so fucking, like, matter-of-fact and consequential, it's crazy. Like, yeah, I just, you know, took this computer class, and then I sent in my resume, and Apple was like, "Hey, you're the shit, so come on down to Silicon Valley, because it's not like we don't have a bunch of other people in California who can't do this job."
Also,
like, it would have been better if she got a job like as the Rangers fucking assistant or administrative assistant. It would have been better if she's like, "I applied for this job as the Rangers like secretary for the GM, and oh my god, I got an interview and I got in. It's like my dream job. I get to be around the Rangers." That's what it should have been if they wanted to get rid of her, not fucking send her to California on this like fucking random ass Anyways.
I didn't know you were so passionate. Also, I want to give you gold stars for your wonderful impression of her. That is spot on. Definitely doesn't sound like a Jewish lawyer or anything.
Wow, that's right. It's so racist of you.
Anywhoozle, that whole story kind of works out to where she keeps asking the women in the office about it. She asks Lesniak, like, if she ever lived out of state, and she keeps, like, doubting herself with the ability to be a receptionist elsewhere, which I don't really understand. And
yeah, because I feel like if you can reception one place, you can reception another.
And this is not to demean receptionists, but it, I mean, it makes sense. Also, she says the phrase at one point, oh, they're just not even going to understand my accent. And I was like, that is a good point. I feel like if you call into California and you heard Donna, you'd be very confused.
Yeah, and I'm not gonna lie, I've lived out here for a while, and some people have really thick New York accents, and it's really hard to understand what they're saying. So, you know, it just kind of happens.
The entire Donna storyline ends with her getting a call from Mr. Comstock, which I found hilarious for fans of Bioshock Infinite, and she says she's not really sure, and then they don't reveal his side of the conversation on the phone. But it's pretty clear that he says, I'll meet you at the Rangers game, and we can talk about it.
He's being very, over the phone, he's being very pushy to get her. And she's like, well, I can't tonight. I have a season-long commitment to the Rangers. And then over the phone, she says something, and he goes, he says something, and she goes, oh. And I think that also helps a little bit, is that he's a Ranger nut. He has tickets, and then they're like, oh, I'll meet you in between the first and second period where the Zamboni leaves, or something like that. And it's like, well, that's an odd little nugget.
Also, I don't know if you, like, I don't know much about Rangers stadium that they play in.
Madison Square Garden, Kirk.
Okay, well, I didn't know that.
It's the United States' most famous stadium. Okay. Or as, like, we like to call it, the world's famous, most famous stadium.
Okay, I think that would be the Coliseum. Anyway, the point I'm making is
when's the last time the Coliseum had a hockey game? Thank you.
I'm talking about the Roman Coliseum, by the way.
That's what I'm saying, by the way. When's the last time they had anything happen in it?
Well, I mean, it was just, I believe, the creation of sport itself kind of occurred there. That's why I think it's probably the world's most famous stadium.
Oh, what sport was that? Murder?
Well, yeah.
Some sport.
Well, yeah, I'm pretty sure it was murder, but
I mean, well, it is football.
Anywhoozle.
Anyways, football's killing everybody.
I also wrote down the quote, I have a season-long commitment to the Rangers, which was, I don't know, it seems intense.
Just a little character development for Donna Abbondando.
She's looking to possibly leave. The other side story that's happening here, James, Lesniak, Russell, and Medavoy are on a murder at a titty bar where the bouncer got beat to death, and then the bartender was beat down, and then they robbed the place. I mean, it's kind of just like a by-the-numbers story in terms of the DOA and the homicide and whatnot, but what's important is at every juncture, it's drum-rolling up to the breakup of Lesniak and Martinez, which has already established to be kind of the worst relationship in the show.
Yeah, so it's so bad so far.
So it's kind of like a big fat who cares when it finally happens. It's not like a...
It's kind of like they had sex and then it all went downhill.
There's moments where Greg and James kind of talk about it, and he's like, yeah, I'm gonna break up with her. And then the next time Lesniak and Martinez talk, it's, oh yeah, well, we gotta talk later. And he's like, yeah, we do. And then they do that again. And then when they talk later, it's very much, yeah, you got possessive, so I don't want to do this anymore. And she's like, oh, I guess I got it from my parents. And he goes, I guess you did. And then he's like, still friends. Let's hold hands awkwardly. And that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it was the weirdest breakup I think ever on TV. Because it was like, because the way they made them act, she was like so in love. She was basically heartbroken that like it was kind of ending in the way it was going. But then when they ended it, it was just like, hey, we're done. Later. And they were like, just like, it was really like calm. It was really, really weird. Really, really awkward.
It also did a very strange thing where they kind of talk through the idea that they're breaking up, and then when it's like, okay, I guess it's over, but we're still friends, then they look at each other, and he goes, give me your hand. And it's like, what? Why would this happen after that? Wouldn't it be, like, during it, and then the separating of the hands kind of symbolizes them breaking up? Isn't that the way you do it in shows and movies? But apparently not NYPD Blue. They play by their own rules. The homicide that they go out on, they go to talk to the bartender who's still alive at the hospital. Oh, this is also after they talk to the owner of the bar, who's just a big dick. That's the only thing.
Oh, yeah, he was being such a douche.
He only cared about how much money was stolen, that they didn't get to the safe, that he had to call his insurance, and they ask him questions about the personal lives of those people, and he's like, oh, I don't know. No, I don't think so. I don't know. Whatever. I gotta call my insurance company.
Yeah, he did not give a fuck to help them out. It was kind of crazy.
Not at all. They talk to the bartender, whose story is, I was in the bathroom, taking a pee break. I hear a commotion. I come outside. They're beating the fuck out of the bouncer. I recognize one of the guys as Pig, this biker. And then they start beating me down. They took all the money and then they left. And he said that he runs with a certain biker gang. So, in a very strange turn, that I think is kind of the weirdest part of this episode, when Andy and Bobby are in the middle of their investigation, we'll get into that later, Andy Jr. shows up with his uniform.
Uniform, he's getting it tailored.
And they go, hey Andy, why don't you come with us as we pick up this biker? You know,
yeah.
At a biker hangout. That seems dangerous. And when they get there, the lesson Andy is taught is kind of, hey, just go hassle these dudes and then threaten to toss their business and disrupt their lives until you get what you want.
And take then, their swag.
And then leave. And
their reefer.
Which is so strange, because it seems dangerous to ask a dude who's not a cop yet to accompany you on this. It also seems like a pretty bad message, which is, no, just go up to where you know he is, hassle everybody until you get what you want, and then when the one guy who, like, I guess, I don't know if he's, like, the ringleader, he's like, yeah, that search never would have held up in court. And Andy goes like, oh yeah, but you would have lost all your swag and your smoke, and then starts making fun of him in the street. And it's like, what the fuck? What, your angle is just to get the guy. So just get the guy.
Well, also, there's a point where one of the bikers says like, hey, you don't have to go in if you don't want to, Pig. And immediately after that, Andy puts both of his hands on the guy and pushes him, like, hard. And says, like, hey, like, basically, like, listen up, motherfucker. And it's like, yo, you can't do that. Like, you can't just push this guy for no reason just because you want to bring this other guy in. You have no probable cause. Like, you don't have a search warrant or anything like that.
Mm-mm.
Like, you are putting your son in danger because there's only four cops and there's, like, 12 bikers.
Yeah.
So let's just say you pushed him and this guy took it the wrong way. You're all going to go down. You all have no shot, and your son's probably going to get his ass whooped because it'll be 12 on 5.
And,
like, I don't know, it's just kind of funny.
And it was insane because at one point a guy grabs like a wrench, like a pipe wrench, and Simone immediately is like, put that wrench down. And I was like, holy shit, guys. Maybe if you came at this a little easier,
yeah,
it wouldn't be that bad, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know what it's like to be a cop. I can't. But it just seemed like, wow. Because they're, like, I don't want to speak up for bikers here, but there are biker dudes that just, like, we like motorcycles. Like, I feel like
that's the quote of the day.
There's
just some bikers that are like, you know what, man, we just like motorcycles, dude.
like,
we're just into motorcycles.
Because I have to imagine there are dudes, if there's a handful of dudes in that biker club or clubhouse or whatever, there's probably a handful of them that don't do any crime or aren't involved with anything. So I don't know.
But the question we have to ask is, why do bikers have a club?
Well, Kyle, it's biker culture. It's something
like, why do they have a clubhouse? Like you're basically saying like they have a clubhouse where they hang together.
Well, Kyle,
it's
kind
of weird.
I'm an expert because I watched Sons of Anarchy. So here's how it works. I'm just kidding. I've never watched that show.
Neither have I.
I hear it's really good. They find out from Pig that he was just there to watch some guy's back who was out for revenge because the bartender was sticking it to his lady, as Pig put it.
Quote, unquote.
And Pig did not know that that's what was going to go down. He thought he was just going to rough him up a bit. He didn't know there was going to be a robbery and death. Also, the gentleman who pays... Wow, that's a tongue twister. The gentleman who plays...
The gentleman that pays Pig.
The gentleman that plays Pig is Dennis Berkeley.
Yep.
Who is a famous face for some of us.
Mm-hmm.
He was in the Pauly Shore classic Son-in-Law. He was also...
Yes, he was. That's what I was trying to remember him.
He was also in the Nicolas Cage classic Con Air. And he's been in a handful of stuff, and sadly...
What was he in Con Air?
I believe he was one of the gentlemen, or I think he was the bartender in the very beginning when Nicolas Cage kills those dudes for trying to have sex with his wife. Oh, I'm sorry.
He kills those three dudes because those dudes are trying to rape his wife, but then he goes to jail because he's a lethal killing machine.
He's not subject to the same laws as other human beings because he's a killing machine, a lethal
Fuck
weapon. They go to this stripper's house.
Oh, that's right.
And this is where the big action occurs, really, because the stripper is very hostile. And says, I don't know where he is. And then they're looking around the place, and the dude bursts out of a bedroom that was locked.
Well, no, they see a pair of pants. And
yeah.
Like, whose is this? And it's like, oh, my roommate's boyfriend's.
Yeah.
But they're not feeling it. They're calling bullshit.
It's clearly a messed up situation, and they pull the dude out. The dude comes out with a woman at gunpoint and said, you're going to let me out of here, I'm going to blow her head off. And the stripper... knocks his ass out with the ashtray that's on the counter, or on the side table.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say something, and you know, it might be insensitive. I found that stripper unattractive and very mean, and I didn't really like her at all. Not a big fan of her.
What did she do that was mean?
I felt she was very mean and rude to the police officers. I understand she was under duress, but there's... It got a little out of hand. She was being a little bitchy. I was just not feeling her. And then when she opened the door, I was like, you're a stripper? And...
She opened the door and I was like, you get naked?
For money?
People pay to see that? Jesus.
So the main story.
Hashtag me too, guys. Hashtag me too.
So, on the main story, they're looking into this Billy character, and they go to where he cops because he's a junkie. For those who aren't down with the lingo, that means to score drugs for his addiction.
Billy now, played by a famous face.
Billy, when he comes out to steal from a gentleman, try to steal a camera out of his car, he is played by Eric King, who was on Dexter for a number of seasons. As well as in National Treasure, another Nicolas Cage classic.
Oh, I forgot that he's in National Treasure.
And he is walking around with his aunt's jewelry in his pocket, but tries to steal a camera off a dude in the street.
Out of a dude's back of, like, his out of his trunk, right?
Yeah, like the guy's unloading stuff into his apartment, and he stops and waits for him to unload some stuff, and then tries to steal it out of the back of his car.
Yeah.
They pick him up for attempted theft. They let him know in a really good interrogation, because I think he's a pretty good actor.
Yeah.
And so is Jimmy Smits. Simone goes hard on him about
the jewelry. He goes hard on him about the jewelry and him, like, he's like, you know, you killed your aunt, but you couldn't, like, subconsciously, you couldn't put those drugs in your arm by using your aunt's stuff. He's like, so that shows that you are kind of a nice guy, but at the same time, you gotta confess and for your sins and all that shit.
Because then Sipowicz, well, he didn't do anything. He comically says at the end of this, how did I do, when he didn't do anything with the first Billy interrogation. But Simone, he really does a great job, the character, as I analyze this way too harshly, where he says, look, man, you're going to start kicking and you're going to need a fix, and then you're going to start to feel the remorse. In a very dark and, like, messed up way, he says to him, you're going to be in Rikers and you're going to hang yourself when you really come to terms with what you did to your aunt when all of this is out of your system. And the guy, he essentially... says, can you just give me a minute to collect my thoughts, I guess.
Yeah.
When really he's coming down from heroin, I guess. So they leave him alone, and this is when they leave him for a bit, is when Andy Jr. comes in. Because when they come to do that second interrogation, they just let him watch through the mirror glass or whatever, the two-way mirror.
Yeah, the two-way mirror.
Which is also weird, because then Simone goes hard on him again, because he says, I stole that stuff from her, but when I showed up at her place, she was dead. They're not ready to believe him, because in the first interrogation, they were being lied to about him even being there. He was like, oh, I didn't go there. And they're like, we saw somebody said, they saw you by the building. And he's like, oh, yeah, well, I went by there today. And he's like, what about if I say that they saw you in the building? And then, yeah. And then he changes the story. And it's pretty dark, because now they just have to decide whether they believe or don't believe this junkie that she was dead when he showed up.
I think having Andy Jr. there made them rethink, like, oh, maybe he's not guilty, or maybe he's not, maybe he didn't do it, you know?
Well, that's another thing. I think this situation is really weird for Simone and Sipowicz, because they want to give Andy Jr. the right lesson in all this.
Yeah.
But they really don't know what to do, because they're not sure if this guy's lying or not. Yeah. So, like, if they tell him, hey, you can't believe a single word they say, their scales, then he's going to go away with the wrong lesson. But if they're wrong, then they let the wrong guy, or they let the right guy go free. So when they come out, they basically say, yeah, we think he did it probably. We think he did it probably.
Yeah.
And Fancy gives them the news that there's a guy who tried to cash one of her checks. And they found another fingerprint that they're going to run from the apartment. They then go to lunch with Andy Jr., and when they come back, they get messages that the fingerprint is not the guy that they had in custody, and the new guy that they're looking into is on his way.
Yeah.
And the guy that they bring in is a guy named Leon Brodus, who is another famous face. That is Mark Ralston, who's been in a fuck ton of stuff.
Yeah, he was in a lot of things. He's in Shawshank Redemption.
If you go to his IMDb, his four known fours, which this is a pretty solid list. His four known fours are Shawshank Redemption, Aliens,
yeah,
The Departed, and Rush Hour.
Oh, that's right. He was an FBI agent in Rush Hour.
And he's also, for fans of the Saw series, he was in some of the latter Saw movies. He's also just been in a shit ton of stuff. He's kind of like a face that's just popped up in tons of things over the years. And he's playing Leon Brodus, who is just a creep from, like, the fucking first moment you meet him.
Yeah.
He's drunk in the morning, and he admits to doing work for her, but he's like, yeah, she just put the check for today's date rather than yesterday when I did the work for her. And Simone is kind of... this is another great scene, because Simone is playing this game with him where he's like, oh yeah, I don't really know what's going on. Also, we found a fingerprint here, which is the guy was never in that room. And, you know, we're just kind of... we just need to kind of count you out. So can I get your fingerprint to check against that one fingerprint in this other room? And the guy agrees because he thinks he's just going to get out of it, which is what Simone wants him to think.
Yeah, yeah. He tricks him, and it was really good.
There's a moment with Andy Jr. where he's like, well, is he going to get a lawyer? And they said, they won't get a lawyer if you work him right. You got to make them think that they're helping themselves.
Yeah.
They're helping themselves by you pretending that they can help you. And that's exactly what they did with this guy. And they find out that he was the dude. They find out that his fingerprint was in the blood in the bedroom. Probably the one that stole the checks when her nephew stole the jewelry. And there is a heart-to-heart moment with Simone and Billy in the crib, where Simone says, here's all her jewelry. Get her a funeral. and when you come back from that, I'll get you into a program.
Yeah.
And it's a really dark moment, I think, because then he like looks at him and he says, "Hey man, I'm a junkie." And Simone says, "Who do you think are in the programs? Some of them come out ex-junkies."
I like that line. I like that back and forth between them. That's all.
Because it's really good. Those two guys are really good actors, and it's kind of what's really sad about it is I fully believe that Billy dude is just gonna go sell that to buy drugs.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 100%.
Because there's interactions between the characters of the show and other drug addicts, and yeah. And they end with like hope, where you think, oh well, they might get help or they might get better. This one literally ends with me just going, no, he's just gonna score drugs. He waited it out, and now he's free to go, and he's just gonna go score drugs and try to live on with what happened. And it was a bummer.
Yeah.
Sipowicz then takes Lehan. It's a great Sipowicz. I didn't write down the quotes, but they're amazing. Where Sipowicz essentially says to the dude, "Hey man, you're dumb enough to think that we wouldn't check those fingerprints with anything we wanted to check it with. He deceived you, which is legal, when we think that an innocent wouldn't get hurt and the guilty are too stupid to realize what they're doing."
That's a fine line that you're giving these men the ability to do, but that's fine.
I kind of want you to elaborate, because that's... What do you mean by that?
Because then you're basically saying that, like, what if Sipowicz lied about something and then gets this, like, just to go after this guy, right? And, like, kind of ruins this guy's life, and then it ends up being nothing. And then he can go, well, you're innocent, so chill out, bro. Like, it's just a fine line. You're just giving people power that you can't really trust to do some shit that maybe you fucked up. I don't know.
I mean, that's fair. It's worth examining. But I feel like the way that they used it in this situation isn't that bad, because what they're saying to the dude is, hey, we need your fingerprint to check against this one area, which that guy in his head goes, I was never even in there. For him to be dumb enough to think, oh, well, if they found it anywhere else, they're not going to then use my fingerprints. That's on him, completely. That's not how investigations work. You're giving up your fingerprint of your own free will. They're going to check it wherever they can. I agree with you to an extent. In this situation, it's kind of like, because if that dude really didn't do anything, because they found the fingerprint in blood, which is important, because that means he was there during the actual murder. But I think the idea of that, I think what you're saying is important, because that one idea that, oh, we can deceive if the innocent won't get hurt, but the guilty can be discovered, that could be stretched to a point where it's just deceit to get...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's that's a difficult one, but I think in this situation it wasn't that wrong. In fact...
No, this situation it wasn't, but I'm not saying that there's other situations where they wouldn't use it in the wrong way.
Yeah. So, and then the action of this episode is, while he's doing that interrogation, he gets the 911 and he just fucking bails from the room. Which is hilarious, because then the guy's like, and what is this about?
Because the guy thinks he's getting, it's another, like, weird fucked up thing.
And him and Andy Jr. get in the car and they go to the hospital. Andy is really, really funny in the last 5 minutes of this episode, maybe 10, because he has this moment with Leon, which is a really, really comical interrogation. Then, when he's at the hospital, he's having all of these funny moments. Like, he sees Sylvia, and she's like, oh, you're a cop? My husband's a cop, too. And then he knows what cop that is.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, Mark, he's a heavyset guy who works over here. And she's like, you're right. And then they push her away, and then the doctor comes in and says a bunch of things he doesn't understand. And then he starts guarding the door with Andy. And
he's like, he keeps telling Andy to guard the door, which is really weird.
And he says, like, he guards the door, and he turns around, and he goes, I don't like that guy's attitude. And Andy Jr.'s like, what? He's like, oh, these, what did he say? I think he said, you know, these smart doctors, they talk to you like you're six.
Yeah.
And then a dude, then the anesthesiologist tries to come in. He's like, oh, who are you? He's like, I'm the anesthesiologist. He's like, yeah, no one's going in there. That's my wife. It's so comical because he's so stressed out, but he doesn't know what to do.
Yeah, but then doesn't he say somewhere, he's like, oh yeah, go. That's what she was looking for.
Yeah, the epidural. She's like, I need the epidural. He's like, I'm going to get the epidural. And he gets him in there. And then he gets the gown on and the cap, and she starts delivering the baby. There's a very strange line that I don't understand, maybe because I'm not a doctor and don't know the ins and outs of giving birth, where he's like, she's delivering like a peasant woman. Which is like, is that just...
That's
like,
weird.
Yeah, is that just a joke you tell to your other OBGYN friends? Like, I don't really understand what that means.
Yeah, that was weird.
And then, like, the baby comes out, and then there's this really short moment of drama where she gushes.
Uh-huh.
Where, like, there's a 30 seconds where you're like, oh my god, is Sylvia gonna die?
Oh, yeah, she passes out.
She passes out and hemorrhages, and then she wakes up and throws up. And then it's just like, oh, don't worry, we're cool. That's it.
Yeah. It's really, really weird.
It's a very strange birth scene, for sure. And then the end of the episode, which is very touching, I think. Especially because at the beginning, Sipowicz and Andy Jr. were not even speaking to each other. Sipowicz comes out and he says, healthy baby, and the mom's okay. And him and Andy Jr. hug. And then he holds the hug and he says, I'm going to be spending more time with him because he's just a little guy, but don't think I love you no less.
Yeah.
And then
that was weird too.
And then they both start crying and then the episode ends. It was a very funny and then weird and then dark and then touching scene in a matter of like 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And also, there's other lines with...
Yeah, it was really weird.
There's other lines with Sipowicz that were great. He, like, bites Donna's head off when he keeps asking her for messages. And she's like, well, do you have a beeper? And he said, yeah, but I'm wondering if she called out a force of habit. And he's like, she's wondering if I got a beeper. And she's like, she's asking... Jumping down her throat. And then, later in the episode... He's talking to Fancy, where he's like, yeah, she went to go to the doctor. Turns out it's not that big a deal. It's not ready to go. And he says, yeah, if it was a deal, she would have gone straight to the hospital. And he's like, yeah. She trusts this guy. She has high confidence in him. And, like, starts a conversation with Fancy that he had no interest in having.
Yeah, it was really weird. It was just like, Sipowicz needed to chill the fuck out. I don't know.
I'm going to ask a question, and it might yield nothing, and I'll cut it out. Do you think Andy has, like, some low-key social disorder?
No, I just think he's a white male and kind of an asshole. I don't think that's a social disorder. I just think he, like, has, like, hella white privilege, and he's just an asshole.
Well, I don't...
Are we calling that a social disorder now?
Well, no, the point I would make is... Not so much the privilege and the whatnot. I think he has real trouble talking and connecting with people.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons he's an alcoholic is because, like, it helps him with his issues that he doesn't want to talk out and deal with because, like, he sees himself as, like, a big, strong man and he doesn't talk about that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think when big, stressful situations come up and he doesn't have the drinking to numb it, he doesn't know how to act properly and, like, and socially, he doesn't know how to respond. So, he just doesn't have the tools to deal with situations that normal people who are well-adjusted can talk out their fears and their frustrations. Which is why, like, he gets into random conversations with people in the office about Sylvia giving birth and why he, like, randomly goes after the doctor when, like, he's just explaining what's going on. And
yeah.
I think, I think that's partially it, but I mean, I don't know. It could just be me overanalyzing. Anyway, do you have anything to say about the show before we wrap it up?
No. It was a good episode. Good foreshadowing.
Yeah, I think the next three episodes are... I don't want to tee them up too high, but the next three episodes are... Well, it's the end of season three, and it's some doozies. It's some heavy shit. And this episode,
that's crazy.
And this episode ended with the birth of Andy's new child, who is going to be named Theo.
It'll be interesting what happens.
Anywho, every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is on AstroBrothersPodcast.com, iTunes, Stitcher, and where you find your podcasts. We're on Twitter at AstroBrosPod, Instagram AstroBrothersPodcast. If you want to send us notes about the shows beforehand, I try to put up recording schedules, but, you know, we're doing these whenever we can, so it may not happen. It just happens randomly. And have a good one. Thank you once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. If you need more NYPD Blue in your life, you could always check out Gene Kendall's book, An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue. It's on Amazon for 99 cents. There's also the book True Blue by David Milch and Bill Clark, guys who created and ran the show. It's only about the first couple seasons, but it's still an interesting read. If you have a couple minutes, please go to iTunes, Stitcher, where you can review the podcast and leave a rating and review. Hey, even if it's bad, even if it's mediocre, I read them and I take them to heart. And then if they're good, I'm super happy. And if they're bad, I just figure out how you're wrong. So thanks for the time. Thank you for listening. Please rate and review. I was just joking about that wrong thing. Have a good one. Make sure to get Hulu or Amazon and start watching the best show ever, NYPD Blue. Get a free trial and binge as much as you can. It's worth your time, and then listen to more NYPD Blue Balls. Peace!